listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
Hello and welcome into the Apollo Launchpad podcast presented by Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original. I'm your host, Paul Walves, and today we have a little bit of a different podcast for y'all because Don's not here. So I'm joined by two guests this time. Brad, go ahead and tell the people that can find you. They should already know you, but anyway.
Hey everyone, my name's Brad. I go by Brado NBA on Twitter. That's at BRADEAUXNBA. I've been on here a few times. I'm happy that Paolo got me back up here.
Yeah, for sure. And we have a podcast debut by Rocket Safe Spaces legend OG. OG, you want to tell the people where they can find you?
Sure. Yeah. So it's OG, the voice at Mr. Bowlware. I'm kind of new to the spaces. I just started joining about a month and a half ago. But I'm a truth teller. I like to tell the truth. I like to be objective at the same time. I'm a Rockets fan, but I'm not a blind loyalist. So I'm gonna tell you how I feel. And so I know that may rub some feathers the wrong way, but that's just who I am. And so it's authentic as you can be.
Yeah, 100%. And that's one of the reasons that we brought you here, because today is probably not going to be an easy podcast to make, because a lot of people were disappointed by what happened just today, earlier today, with the trade deadline. But we'll get to that on our second segment, I believe. For now, the Rockets just played against the Toronto Raptors at Toyota Center. They lost, but we had some good games from some of the young guys. We're going to get a fresh reaction to the game, like right after the game. We saw KPJ continue his hot shooting streak from three. He was also, at least in my opinion, making some good decisions, and it was overall one of his best games of the season. But that was not it. We saw a completely different Christian Wood. We saw Jalen Green step it up and score the ball well for what has been his average efficiency. So, Brad, we'll go to you first. What some takeaways from the game we just saw?
First, I want to say the Rockets lost by 19, and this is a game I'm not mad about at all. I've never been happy about a 19-point loss before. Of course, there were things that were just atrocious, like them not being able to break a full-court press. I felt like I was watching an AAU game at times. The turnovers they have to take care of. But outside of that, you had a great game from Kevin Porter Jr. You said one of his best games of the season. I'd go as far to say that was his best game of the season, with 30 points, 8 assists, 69% from the field, 67% from three. Only three turnovers. So he played all-around great game. He did everything he was supposed to do out there. Had the first 11 points of the night. So great game from Kevin Porter. Kevin Porter continued his hot streak. Then you also had Jalen Green go out there and get 18 points, and he shot over 50% from the field. So that's the best I've seen those two look as a duo on the court this entire season. So that's very encouraging. And as for the game, you know, Christian Wood has been very tunnel vision the entire season. But today he had 6 assists, which is his season high, one short of his career high of 7. So I have to give him props there for not being as tunnel vision, even though he still has instances where he needs to find his people. You know, very big improvement getting 6 assists tonight. So good on Christian Wood for doing that.
Yeah, for sure. And this was also a weird game rotations-wise, because the Rockets just traded DJ Augustine, they traded Daniel Theis. And as a result, they had to take back to like salary filler guys, and so they have to waive some other guys. So Armani Brooks was not available. I think he's getting waived. DJ Augustine was also not available. So Silas was forced into playing a different rotation where David Nwaba played minutes, where all of the other guys that are already on the rotation were forced to play more than they usually do. So OG, what did you make of the game in general, and if you want to comment specifically on that second unit?
Yeah, I thought the game overall, it was a good game offensively, but I've seen that. And, you know, I'm a coach at heart, and I'm a coach by nature. I love coaching basketball. And so when I'm looking at the games, I'm not necessarily looking at how many points we put up. I look at it from a coach's eye, meaning I'm looking at the things that we didn't do well, because that's how I build my practices, right? I go look at the game, see what we did, what we didn't do well, and then I build my next practice based on that. And so when I look at the games, it's always things I point at, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I don't want to talk. I thought there were some good things offensively. I thought Jalen looked aggressive, so that was good. He's coming out of his shell, not being stagnant, not just standing around. I'm not going to go into Christian Wood too much, at least not right now. I thought KPJ, needless to say, had a great game. He had a super game from the offensive side. He typically plays both sides of the ball, so no issues there. But some of the things that I saw, that press, whatever that was, I haven't seen anybody in the pros try to press since Rick Pitino tried that with the Celtics with his first stint at coaching NBA basketball. And needless to say, he got run out of town pretty quick, because you can't press pros. Guys can handle the ball too well. I just things like that. When I'm looking at the game and I see us throwing the ball right into the coffin corner, that's where the press wants you to go. And that's exactly what we did. Just little things like that. And again, the offense, from an offensive side, I think individually guys did well. But some of the things I don't like to see is I like to see more structure. I don't like to see everybody having a green light. I love Garrison Matthews from a shooting aspect. I think he can shoot the ball really well, but he doesn't need to have an ultra green light. He's got an ultra green light, just like everybody else. So I thought it was good offensively. Defensively, one of the things that I stopped coaching in since the fourth, when my kids were in the fourth grade, was zone defenses, because it teaches laziness. I'm big on man-to-man with help principles. And when the Rockets, whoever's on the ball, once they get beat, it's a layup, right? There's no help side defense. There's no communication. There's nothing going on. So to me, when I'm looking at the team and I'm looking at progression and how are we getting better, I like to look at little things like that, because those are things you can build on. Offense comes and goes. Effort and defense, you control that every day, and I expect to see that every day. And I just don't see that every night. And that's just an honest opinion. I wish I could say, yeah, it was great on both sides of the ball. And I don't expect it to be, right? These guys are young, but they're not young enough to know how to not play help defense, communicate on defense, sliding over, being in position, rotating, Xing out, things like that. Those guys know that, man, but it's not pressed upon. So they know they don't have to do it, and so they don't do it. So that's where I get a little disappointed in Silas more than the players, because if he demands it, they'll do it. You can just tell it's not demanded. But that's pretty much my take overall.
Yeah, and tied into what you said about the defense, the Raptors are on the second half of a back-to-back, and they don't have their all-star Fred VanVleet, and they still dropped 139 points on the Rockets. So you can tell by that they didn't play great defense. I would add even that, I mean, David Nwaba played. He's supposed to be like the difference between rotations from the usual to what it was now, is David Nwaba took some of the minutes that Armani Brooks sometimes does. And that's supposed to be a really big swing defensively. And we really didn't feel like it was. And then at the end of the day, I think what happens with these young teams is if it's going really well offensively, they'll just get lazy and think, oh, like, okay, I'll give a layup up and here, and then I'll just get it back on the other end really quick. And I think playing with that mentality eventually catches up to you. And the Rockets went on runs, but they could just never stick with the Raptors, because on the other side of the ball, they were just giving up easy scores time and time again. A good reference for that is, Gary Trent Jr. had 42 points. Pascal Siakam got ejected, and he had 30 points. So I think from the defensive standpoint, there's a lot left to be desired.
Yeah, and they had those numbers with good shooting percentages, right? It's Gary Trent, 15 for 26, and then Siakam, 13 and 19, right? So it wasn't even hard. We didn't even make it hard for him. And so those are some of the issues that I have. And then I think at one point when we had that junk lineup out there, I just don't get that, right? I don't, I, you know, I don't know.
OG, let me pick up on that for you, because that drunk lineup consisted of Josh Christopher, David Nwaba, KJ Martin, Jayshon Tate, Shingun. That might have been the worst lineup I've seen all season. I saw people on Twitter calling it a 5-in lineup. I don't think I've ever seen that before. And the Raptors went on a crazy run as soon as Silas threw that lineup in. And if you think about it, Shingun needs to be surrounded by shooters. So for him to throw in all those non-shooters around Shingun was very confusing. I'm sure he was in the mindset like, oh, the Raptors are running us out the gym. We need to play some defense. But you can't do that with Shingun. It's not going to work. It's going to be even worse. So that's just something he can never do again. I said I'd never watch the Rockets again if I saw that lineup. I was lying, but he better not do it again.
It reminded me of when I first started coaching basketball. I used to try to do – it was, you know, you try to make everybody happy, and so you had a five-in, five-out lineup. And every time I would take – you know, of course, the best five would be – there, and then you put the other guys in. Every time the team would just, if we had a big lead, the team would just catch up and make a huge run. So it didn't take very long. And Silas has been, he knows more basketball than I ever will know. He's been around the game his whole life. And so for me, and the game was winnable at that point. Now, I know that winning isn't the most important thing at this point, but if you've got a chance to win, don't contribute to your loss, right? Don't do things that are going to help you lose a game. And so when he put that lineup out there, it made no sense at all. To me, if I can understand why you're doing what you're doing, then and it doesn't work, that's fine, right? Because your plan is, this is going to work. That's why I'm doing it. Coaches just don't do things because they don't think they're going to work. They assume they're going to work. But that one, I'm like, dude, what are we doing? What are we trying to do? This makes absolutely no sense. Some of those things are just confusing to me. Here's another thing that I don't get. I understand that Gary Matthews is a good shooter, and I don't have anything against him at all. I wish him well, and I think there's a spot for him on his team. Ideally, that spot is off the bench. But I think guys like between Shingun and Christopher, I think this was an opportunity for either of those guys to step in and play, if for no other reason, to get a lot of minutes, just to get a lot of growth. You got Gary Matthews with 32 minutes tonight, Shingun with 21, and Josh Christopher with 15. In a perfect world, if we're talking about 2 or 3 years from now, Gary Matthews is going to be your sixth or seventh man, possibly even eighth man, right? And the worst, in the same 2-3 years, I expect Josh Christopher to at least be a sixth man, if not starting. I know that they know. I know they have to know that. So that it bothers me when I see him putting Gary Matthews in the game and prioritizing him over either one of those guys, because those guys are going to be crucial to what we're trying to do in years to come. So again, it's just another one of those things where I'm just like, I don't mean to just sound like everything that coach is doing is bad, but it needs to make sense. And I just don't, I mean, I know I get it. You know, Matthews is a shooter. I want to make sure we space the floor. But again, I'm going to prioritize at least Josh Christopher in that situation, because I know I'm going to be leaning on him. I expect to lean on him in a couple of years. And so, again, just one of those things that didn't make sense again for me.
Yeah, he played, for reference, Christopher played 14 minutes, and that was second least, like, in the entire team. I think the only guy that played less was Nwaba. He played 7 minutes. And it's pretty telling and pretty worrying that even in a game where the Rockets were missing three players due to trade, and they know that Dennis Schroeder's coming back on that deal, and Silas just referenced post-game that he's someone who's going to play a role for the Rockets, you have to wonder if in a game where Dennis Schroeder wasn't even there, Josh Christopher only got 14 minutes, what's going to happen when Dennis Schroeder is there? Does it eat away even more from Josh Christopher's minutes? Whose minutes is this guy taking? Because to me, that's a big worry, because to me, it's already bad that you're playing Dennis Schroeder when, in my opinion, you should be giving Deshaun Nix, that's in the D-League, tearing it apart. You should give him a shot, because he's 20 years old. You send guys to the D-League and you hope that they perform just like Deshaun Nix is performing, so you can give them a shot. Because that's the progression. Once you're clearly above the D-League level, the only thing you can do for development is bring him up and give him a shot at the NBA. So it also doesn't sit well with me that even in a game like this, Josh Christopher only managed to play this much. I don't know. Do y'all have any thoughts on who he should take the minutes away? Maybe Garrison Mathis, like you said. I'm not sure.
Man, I'll say this. I have no clue who's going to lose minutes, but I'll tell you this. There's not a single person in that lineup right now that should lose minutes to Dennis Schroeder. When they initially got him, I knew he was on an expiring deal. So my first thought was, okay, he's getting bought out, as are the other three guys that they had. But it looks like Silas is going to play this guy. Kelly Eco came out and said he's going to have a role on the team. He's not a playmaker. He's a scorer first, but he shouldn't get in the way of the young guys if he doesn't have the ball in his hands. I'm not so sure I like that quote, because that means he's not really benefiting the young guys on the court if he's not having the ball in his hands. And his strength is having the ball at his hands. We saw it, you know, when the Rockets played the Thunder in the playoffs a few years back. He was cooking everybody on the Rockets, but that was 2 years ago. He's not that good now. But that's just where he excels. He's not the best shooter. So him coming in, I don't know who's losing minutes. You brought up a great point. Paolo, I won't call you Pro anymore. My apologies. You brought up a great point. You brought up a great point, because if Christopher is only playing 14 minutes now, then you have. And he was playing backup minutes. It was evident he was playing backup minutes tonight. With Schroeder coming in, you have to think, okay, Jacob slides to the 2 or 3, and he has to try to get his minutes there. So I don't know. I guess it's going to depend on who's having a good game and who's not. But it's pretty concerning. But I won't judge Schroeder. I'll say this, because last deadline, everyone was slandering Kelly Olynyk before he came to the team. He was a fan favorite by the end of the season. So I will hold my slander for Dennis Schroeder until the end of the season.
I'm not going to hold my slander. I'm going to give it to you right now. Because, again, he's not part of our future. So right. you've got what? How many games have we played now? Let's see, 55. So we got 27 games left. So
yes,
with that being said, what are we doing, right? Well, we're trying to win. I don't think we appreciate where we are enough. I don't think we are really taking advantage of this whole situation, right? Because if you are, all the young guys, man, are getting all the burn they can get. You're putting in a little bit of structure. This is valuable time. I always say, and you guys are hearing me say a lot of the same things a lot, because it makes sense in that you're either going to be really good or you can be really bad, but you don't want to be middle of the pack. So we're not really good, needless to say. We are really bad. So let's get everything out of being really bad. And that's growth. That's letting those young guys play, getting all the minutes that they can get. I don't need to see what Dennis Schroeder can do. I don't plan on re-signing him. We can't trade him at this point. So tell me why it benefits anyone for Dennis Schroeder to be on the court. And that's rhetorical. I'm not asking you guys to answer that, but it makes no sense for that guy to be on the court. And so I don't care what he looks like. I don't care if he turns into a fan favorite at the end of this. I hope he doesn't turn into a fan favorite. That means he didn't get a lot of playing time. Because it makes no sense. I want to see the young guys utilize every minute of this time. I think you saw a bounce in Jalen Green's step tonight. Almost I bet he could feel like, okay, now that part is over. Now is my time. Let me go out and let me get some burn. Same with KPJ. Now he's been on this ascend in the last couple of weeks, few weeks, maybe a month anyway. But I don't want to keep stunting the growth of those guys, man. I don't want to do it. I don't need to see Dennis Schroeder at all. He doesn't need to play. If he doesn't like his role on the bench, then, I mean, so be it. You won't have to be here next year. So unless they come out and say, yeah, we plan on playing him next year, he's going to be a part of what we're doing. Otherwise, I don't care to see him. Not in one of the 27.
Yeah, 100%. I think you expect post-deadline, and I think a lot of Rockets fans were holding out for the deadline because they expected, hey, the deadline is that reset button. After the deadline, we're going to move these guys and we're going to give all the playing time and all of the burn to the young guys. So that's a perfect segue. We're going to get into that in our next segment. For now, we'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And we're back. I'm once again here with OG and Brad, and we're going to get into some, I mean, it's pretty recent. The trade deadline was, what, I think 8 hours ago at this point. So we're going to give you some reactions and some analysis on the deals that were, the deal that was made and the deals that weren't made that a lot of people wanted them to be made. So let's just start it off by perhaps the most surprising guy. Eric Gordon is still a Houston Rocket post the deadline. We're well past it and nothing's happened. So that's pretty intriguing. We know that Rafael Stone was looking for a first round pick and he was looking to not take on salary past 2023 because like everything lines up for them to have a lot of cap space then. And the priority would be for them to get a pick that was not this year, if they did, of the first, but somewhere down the line so they have more time to move it. I mean, nothing happened, so he couldn't get, I don't know if he couldn't get any of that stuff, or it just there was just two of those that he couldn't meet. So what I know now is that Eric Gordon is still Houston Rocket. So what are your thoughts on it? OT, we'll go to you first.
Kicking it to me?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I thought that that was the one that would probably happen sometime overnight. I didn't think there was a place or a world where Eric Gordon would still be on his team. Just for him, I mean, I like the guy. I think he's bit the bullet for the Rockets for quite some time. I would have liked to see, needless to say, I would have liked to see us move him. And I think there were a couple of different spots. When I see other guys being moved around, I'm not going to necessarily say, you know, I guess I can say lesser talent to some degree. I see some guys being moved around and I see him still here. That was a little disappointing. I just want to know, what I really want to know before I start sounding off is, what did we pass up? I know there's still a lot of speculation out there as far as what we passed up. I hear in some cases that we didn't want to take a late first or whatever the case may be. I think it's all speculation right now. So I'll hold off from that perspective. But at the same time, I'm a little bit disappointed that my man is still here for his sake, right? And I hear a lot of people talking about, well, yeah, we can just buy him out, you know, if it doesn't work out. Well, it's not going to work out. And he's going to be a year older. So, I mean, to me, it's going to be harder to move him next year. So I'm kind of in a place where I don't know what the organization is trying to do. But again, I think the key question for me is, what did we pass up? When that comes out, and I don't know if that ever will come out. I don't know if they will ever share that sort of information. Maybe it'll just always be speculation. But I wanted to see him gone for his sake. I think he deserves that. And for the Rockets' sake, I think it would have been a good move, needless to say. So I'm disappointed. But, you know, I think when I went to bed, well, I won't even get on Christian Wood because we're talking about Eric Gordon right now. But, yeah.
We'll do I'm that just, next.
Okay. Yeah, that's... that's kind of my deal. And I don't, you know, I know you guys kind of dig more into the analytics part of that and the numbers and so forth. So I'd like to hear your takes on that, Brad, and how you felt about him still being here and why you think he is still here.
I think Eric Gordon is still here, and I'll touch on Christian Wood as well later on in the segment. But the same reason, Rafael Stone had an asking price and he wasn't going to budge on that asking price. And that is the sole reason, in my opinion, why you still see Eric Gordon on this team. He was saying for a long time he thought Eric Gordon was worth a first-round pick. We all thought Eric Gordon was worth a first-round pick. Don't let any fan tell you that they thought he wasn't. You know, as it came closer to the deadline, teams were saying, like the Suns, they're like, oh, we're interested in Gordon, but we're not interested to trade a first now, even though they have the best record in the NBA, so that's the 30th pick in the draft. And you have to think, like, teams that could have been interested, you know, the Sixers need the guard. They went out and got James Harden. The Lakers, I'm sure the Rockets didn't want to take that THT contract. And then people were throwing out the Timberwolves as a team that could, you know, potentially be interested in Gordon. But none of that happened, of course. I'm sure Stone was not getting the first-round pick that he desired. And he is a new GM. He doesn't want to get bullied. So he's going to stay stern on his asking price and staying consistent. And I'll bring up Morey as an instance for this. You know, remaining stern on your asking prices is good in some instances. You saw it with Harden. He didn't want to give up Maxey the first time around. He got shipped to Brooklyn. And this whole little debacle with Ben Simmons, he passed up a bunch of good deals. He was asking for crazy things. And everyone was like, oh, Morey's a madman. He's a madman. And at the end of the day, Morey ended up getting what he wanted. So sometimes you just have to put your foot down and you'll get what you want. So maybe that happens in the offseason. Of course, a different situation where Eric Gordon is going to be a year older. But we'll see what they end up getting for him in the offseason. As for Eric Gordon going forward, I've heard Kelly Eco report that he might not play again as a possibility just because of the injury he has right now. I don't know how for certain that is, but I'm just hopeful if he does play, it doesn't take away too many minutes from the young guys, because you already have Shorter coming in. It's going to take minutes away from the young guys.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring up something that just came out post-game. I agree with you. Like, Stone did not want to budge on his price because he already did with the Oladipo stuff. You want to set the precedent that he's not a weak negotiator. He's not going to cave. Otherwise, teams heading into the deadline will always like wait until the last second expecting him to cave. So it's good to, like, from a negotiation standpoint, to do that. But Kevin Porter Jr. just had a really strong message post-game about Eric Gordon. He said he's really happy Eric Gordon is traded, and I wasn't traded, and I quote, "Can't put an amount of how much I wanted him to stay. It would have been hard on me and the team if the trade did happen. We're glad that it didn't. We want Eric here as long as we can have him. Since I was little, I liked Eric. Being able to make it here and be on his side, you get to know him actually as a person and not just as a player. Everyone needs a person on their team, in their family, like Eric. That should tell it all right there. We want Eric, we love Eric, and I'm sure he feels the same way about us." So, as a GM, you've got to make tough decisions. And you've got to sometimes be the bad guy and do it for the best of the team and for the best of the assets going forward. But a part of me also thinks that if Eric Gordon's this important, and if the guys love him that much, and he's been nothing but a stand-up professional the entire time he's been here, and if he himself doesn't have a problem being here, at what point is the first-round pick that you're going to get back for him? Like, imagine the reverse situation. If you had that first-round pick, and you could trade it for this, let's call it, like, intangibles value that Eric Gordon apparently provides, would you do it? And I mean, to me, that's a tough question. I don't know how y'all feel about this quote from KPJ, but that's pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds real nice. And we can just sit around and drink some hot cocoa and eat some spoils. Yeah, but I mean, this is a business, man. I mean, I'm glad to know that he looks at him like an uncle and all that, but at the same time, we're trying to do something here, right? And he just doesn't fit what we're trying to do. In a perfect world, there's no room for him. So, I mean, I get the fact that he likes him to be around and all that, but that's not benefiting Eric, and it's not benefiting him. And most importantly, it's not benefiting the team. So I mean, that sounds good, and I'm happy they all love each other, but that's not going to sway me one way or another. I mean, you said it best. As a leader, you got to make the tough decisions. And so sometimes, as a father, right, I don't always make the decision that everybody wants to hear or wants me to make. I got to make the one that's best for us as a whole. And that's a part of being a leader. So, while I respect that, I just don't see a world where that makes sense for Eric Gordon to be on this team. I had a question for you guys. What were that THT offer? It was just THT for Eric Gordon or THT in the number one? What was it?
I forget, outside of THT in the 2027 first round pick. God, if there was another piece outside of that, remind me. Was that pretty much the framework of that deal?
I think it was supposed to be Kendrick Nunn, but we've got to take it with a grain of salt, because if it's not reported by Woj, George Shams should always take it with a grain of salt.
Agree.
And that deal's not too bad, though. That's 3 years, $30 million that he's on. I don't think $10 million a year. I mean, what is Eric making?
18 for 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, if I can get a pick back, and I'm a little bit afraid of THT. I think his body type, it spells blow up, like he's going to get big. I get a little bit worried about that. But if I could get him, he's a young guy. and kind of get him before he starts to blow up, and then I can get a pick as well. I wouldn't be for Eric Gordon. That's not, is that not, you guys don't think that that's a good enough deal?
I think it is, but like I said, I think if they could have gotten a first that far down, they would have done it. I also think the Lakers, if they were willing to deal that first, they would rather swap Westbrook for Wall than actually getting Eric Gordon. But that's just me. But, I mean, we've talked about Eric Gordon a bunch. We're like halfway through the segment, so let's move on to Christian Wood. And I know this is a lot tougher of a debate because I know, I mean, at least for myself, I would much rather see Christian Wood have gone anywhere that's not here. Then at the same time, I guess today he wasn't too bad. He was not getting in the way as much. He was passing the ball a little bit more. And I guess if he's going to play like he did for certain stretches of this game, maybe it's not too bad. Then again, it's tough to speculate on these trades because we are not in there and we don't know what the actual deals look like, right? So take it with a grain of salt. Anything we say is based on speculation. So we're not trying to say fire anyone, at least I'm not. And I don't know what the guys are about to say, but yeah, let's go into that. Brad, you wanna start us off on Christian Wood?
Yeah, so with Christian Wood, my biggest thing with him being traded in the first place, I'm just trying to find out if he has a future on this team, right? Do they view him as a guy who's going to be re-signed in 2023? For that to happen, he needs to fit with Alper and Sengun. So they've been testing that out, but you can't really see how well that lineup will work because Jae'Sean Tate is out there in the starting lineup with them. And Jae'Sean Tate is a guy that's always going to be in the starting lineup. So when there's no spacing on the court, it's hard for Sengun to, you know, thrive. As I said, when the Rockets are in that 5-in lineup earlier in that game today. So it's hard to really see how well Christian Wood was going to fit in the future. So that's why I was hoping the Rockets could potentially find a deal for him. But again, they didn't get an offer that, you know, was their asking price, you know, the Hornets. I saw people throw around PJ Washington, Book Knight, and Nick Richards. And I'm sure the Hornets were not willing to do that and they ended up getting Montrezl Harrell instead. Outside of that, the Raptors were a team that could have been interested, but they would have had to swap Goran Dragic. Goran Dragic ended up going to the Spurs and got waived. So that's another team that Christian Wood off the market for. So with those two teams gone, I was like, okay, Christian Wood is staying. So now we have to accept that. And now going forward, you just have to see if this guy's a long-term fit. And if you don't think he is, then ship him off in the offseason or whenever they feel is necessary. But I just don't want them to waste time with a guy who's going to have the ball in his hands most of the time. And, you know, just focus the development on the younger guys.
Yeah, and let me touch on that a little bit because I didn't think this way before, but I don't think Christian Wood's value drops that much if you hold on to him until the off season. I would have rather moved him now because I value the rest of the season this season. And I think with him not here, the young guys would get more time to develop and more time to gel with the ones that actually matter and the ones that are actually planned to be on here long term. But I've had people tell me that the NBA is not what it used to be, where someone being a free agent is a big problem because every team's looking to have cap space and sign someone off free agency. As long as you're a guy over that MLE $10 million level that every team has, it's probably fine if you hit free agency as long as you have that player's bird rights, because nowadays the only teams that ever have cap space are, I mean, now we have the Portland Trailblazers next year, but that's a rare occasion. Usually what teams do is a tanking team has cap space in order to be able to take a salary with assets and acquire picks that way, but the contending teams usually just trade and get really high up in salary when they are contending. So I think the fact that trading Christian Wood next season sends bird rights with him, and I think bird rights today are a lot more of a guarantee that you can re-sign the guy. But going that aside and going back to the impact of having him on the court and on the young guys, OG, you wanna touch on that?
Yeah, so I think, first off, I think having him on the court and his, to me, his bad habits. First off, I think I've been around the game and I coached a lot of kids. I think certain characteristics it kind of define who you are, right? And it's kind of hard to, when I see certain things, I just know, yeah, that's a character trait. That probably, that's who he is. That's not going to change. It's just part of his character. And some of the things that I don't like about Christian Wood, I view them as just bad, not bad habits, bad character traits. I think, and this is a strong statement, but I think he's lazy. I think he's more of a detriment to the young guys because he shows them that you don't always have to go as hard and you can still, you know, get a lot of minutes and still get paid. And I think that's a terrible example to set for guys that are trying to learn their way through the league. So that's my biggest complaint with him. Not so much, he's terrible defensively, right? We all know that. His 20 and 10 is empty, right? It's an empty 20 and 10. It has no context. It doesn't, all it does is show up in the box scores. So while I think he can get a bucket every now and then, it's only one person that I can imagine. I think it's a few other guys, but one person I was willing to put up with their bad defense and effort on that end, and that was James Harden, just because he's the exception, right? His offense and the way he runs that offense like an engine, he's the engine of it. He makes it go. You can live with what he doesn't do on the defensive end. You can go get someone else to kind of make up for his bad habits because he's that good. Christian Wood is nowhere near on that level. So to me, keeping him around is more detrimental to the young guys. Now, if this was an older group, yeah, they'll keep him in check. Even if John Wall was playing, John Wall would keep him in check. But with this young group, he leads more in a negative way than he does in a positive way. And I'm not saying he does it intentionally, but he does it, you know, subconsciously, right? I mean, it happens. And so that's my biggest point to him. But I will say, with that being said, I like the fact that somebody made the point on the space earlier that, you know, if we do keep him and wait till next year, and I think you just made the point as well, Paulo, that contract becomes more attractive because it has less years on the back end of it. And then you get the bird rights included in it as well. So from that aspect, I can see not getting what you want for him and saying, well, no, that's not good enough. I'm a whole firm, because you don't have to, right? You're not trying to win anything. They're not, you know, it's not like they were trying to give you, I think you can hold firm. I want two first or whatever it is. And if you don't get it, okay, well, we'll just wait till next year. We'll probably have the same opportunity next year. So I'm fine with, and I had already came to grips with, the organization is okay with him and his bad habits. And so I had a feeling he wouldn't get traded. And so I wasn't too surprised when he didn't get traded. And now it makes a lot of sense that they did hold firm, although I wouldn't have complained if they would have moved him today, last week, whenever. I'm just not a fan at all. And I think he's a detriment. That's my take on him.
Yeah, and I wonder if one of the reasons that he was not moved was actually because, just like you said, he needs someone who keep it in check, to keep him in check. He needs someone who is clearly the best player on that team and someone who's a vet, like that player to be more of a vet and more someone who has a big name already. And the most of that, like the biggest destination that people mentioned was the Charlotte Hornets. I'm not sure LaMelo Ball is that yet. I'm not sure Gordon Hayward is that yet. So maybe they were a little bit scared from that aspect as well. And so to counterpoint that, maybe the team that raised for Christian Wood is actually not a mid-tier team, but it's actually a contender that's going to give you firsts down the line. And if you hit next year, another row of firsts, 2029, becomes available. So it's more likely that a team can make a move like that. Even if those firsts are late, I mean, at that point, you take what you can get. But that's going to do it for us for the second segment. We'll come back really quickly with the third segment, where we're going to address the trade that did happen, the Daniel Theis trade. And we're going to get some thoughts in on James Harden joining the Philadelphia 76ers, since, I mean, it's not really Rockets related, but it's James Harden. Like, we'll always have, like, either a sweet spot or a really sour spot for him, depending on who you ask. So we'll be right back.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And we're back here with Brad and OG for the last segment. So as I said before, the first thing we're going to address here is the Daniel Theis trade, the one move that they made. They traded, for context, they traded Daniel Theis for Dennis Schroeder, whose contract's expiring, for Enes Kanter, or Enes Freedom, or whatever you want to call him, who's also expiring, he's on a minimum deal, and a young center, or youngish center, called Bruno Fernando. They immediately, so to make the trade happen, they traded away Daniel Theis, and they had to waive both Armani Brooks and DJ Augustine, who had, DJ Augustine had a really small guarantee next year. Armani had nothing guaranteed, so there's no cap issues behind that. But they had to be waived for roster spots. And then, right after the trade materialized, they immediately waived Enes Kanter, or Enes, or Freedom, or whatever you want to call it, because we're not going to get into the politics here, but he's someone who's not appreciated in Turkey, and Operan Şengün's Turkish, so you don't want to have that weird vibe going on the team. So they were quick after the trade was announced to just say, hey, we're waving this guy, we don't want anything to deal with him. But yeah, Daniel Theis was someone that the Rockets signed pretty much for nothing. Like, they didn't use the MLE for it. They had an expiring traded player exception. So what they did, it was, back then they used that as a sign of trade, and they got Daniel Theis on this long ass deal. And then, I mean, y'all know what happened. I'll let y'all get into it. OG, if you wanna kick us off with some thoughts on this trade and Daniel Theis in general.
Yeah, I kind of like Theis, but I know he wasn't a fit. I liked him whenever we got him. I thought it was a good deal. I thought he and Wood would be able to play better together. Unfortunately, that didn't work. So I wasn't opposed to moving him. And then the Armani Brooks and DJ Augustine, I'm a fan of both of those guys, man. I love good basketball, and I think both of those guys play good basketball. But I also understand there's just no room for him here. So I didn't have an issue with that move. One way or none of those, either of those moves, one way or another. So to me, it was neither here nor there. I thought it was something that needed to happen. And so, yeah, I'm good with it. I didn't have any issues with them.
Yeah, Brad. Yeah. What about you? You got?
Yeah, I'll touch on it. I first want to touch on, you know, DJ and Armani getting cut. You know, those are two guys that are very likable. DJ was a guy you can come off the bench and just at least, it'd be nice to have a true point guard out there. That's the Rockets, you know, they need that the whole year. So that's what DJ would come in and do. And he had that great game against the Hawks in Atlanta that I was able to go to, thankfully. But they had that huge comeback, and he had 22 points and hit a bunch of threes. And we just haven't seen him recently. He's not a guy that was really prioritized on the Rockets because Christopher forced his way into the rotation, so he needed minutes, and those were DJ Augustine's minutes. So I could see him getting cut. You know, he did come out and say, you know, I'd love to stay. And Paolo, I remember you tweeted something like, of course he would say this. I forget the exact details, but you can get into that when you start speaking. Or actually, go ahead and say, and tell me, because I actually want to know.
Yeah, he wanted to stay. I mean, I'm sure he loves Houston, but he wanted to stay because he had a partial guarantee next year of $333K. He had the non-guaranteed part, which is up to $7 million, and we all know nobody's giving him $7 million. So I guess he was trying to he was trying to make people feel bad, or
yeah, that's what
he was trying to do. So because it's like, if I don't get waived, I'm making the $7 million anyway because they become guaranteed eventually, right?
Okay, yeah, that's what it was. So that's the reason he said that. And so I'm ultimately not surprised that he did get cut. As for Armani, a guy everybody loves, coming from U of H, you know, fan favorite. He's coming there, Sniper Brooks. But he was not Sniper Brooks this season. He shot 30% from three on the year, 35% total. It just wasn't working. And the last game he played 8 minutes, had zeros across the board, had one turnover. And at that standpoint, I was like, yeah, his time is done in Houston. So I was not surprised if he got traded or cut. He ended up getting cut. So those are the two guys that are out for the Rockets. As for the guy they're bringing in, or the guy they're trading, I'll speak on Daniel Theis first of all. When they signed him, I knew that a four-year, $36 million contract was a very tradable piece. That's what I knew coming in. So if this know, little matchup that they wanted to have with him and Christian Wood didn't work, they had an easy fallback option, even if it was in the same season. And that's exactly what happened, because him and Christian Wood looked terrible, you know, worst front court pairing in the NBA. And they just nixed him from the lineup completely, and they were able to trade him for expiring contracts. So this is a trade that I'm ultimately not mad about. But I will say, this is a trade I think they could have done earlier, because they picked up Schroeder now. If you wanted to make this trade earlier, you can get Schroeder, and now you have a chance to move Dennis Schroeder, because Schroeder is a guy, in my opinion, has some value. I could be wrong. I don't know the market as these GMs do. But looking at it from my standpoint, you could have got Schroeder maybe a week earlier, a few days earlier, and tried to dish him off to another team. And now he's stuck on the Rockets playing minutes and could potentially take some minutes away from the younger guys. But, yeah, I'm happy they're cutting an Esprit guy they don't need on the team. As for Bruno, and remind me again who the third guy in the package was.
Enes Kanter, that's already waived.
Oh, that's right. I was thinking of someone else outside of Dennis, Bruno, and Kanter. But, yeah. Yeah, so I just wish he would have made that trade a little earlier. But, you know, getting expiring contracts for a four-year, $36 million contract, it's a good move in my opinion.
Yeah, I think ultimately they wanted out of that experiment. Like they, I mean, my personal belief is they had that deal agreed to with Daniel Theis before the draft, because I mean, we know the NBA doesn't want you to think that they're tampering, but they're tampering, and I just believe that the deal was already agreed to. They weren't expecting to be able to draft Langoon. They had to trade up to do so. So. Like when they drafted Langoon, they now had a problem where they already had the verbal commitment with Theis, so you don't want to like damage any relationships with agents or something like that. And so they signed him anyway, and then they tried to like force him into the lineup, and it wasn't working, and then eventually just had to hit the bench. So at that point, they just cut their losses and didn't risk him ever becoming a bad contract or getting hurt and not being tradable. It's not working. We can't play you. You're a good vet. Go to a good team and then go fight for whatever the Celtics are fighting for. OG, I don't know if you have any more thoughts on Theis, or should we move on to the Harden stuff?
We can go to the Harden stuff because I want to make sure I got some time to speak on that.
Yeah, it seems like totally the right topic to ask you about. So, news break. James Harden got traded to the 76ers for Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and two first-round picks, one protected, one through eight in 2027, and one that the Nets can choose either in 2022 this year or 2023 next year, and that those are both unprotected. So, pretty big deal. James Harden's no longer a Net. The way he left was not pretty as well. Just like in Houston, he was playing poorly, and then he got injured, and people were doubting whether his injury was real or not. And then they played a big like game around it where so the Nets pretended that it didn't want out and weren't going to deal with him, and then the last day today, Walt just said, hey, James Harden doesn't want to be a Net, like he wants to go to the Sixers, and they just had to rush into a deal. So I'm sure there's a lot of varying takes regarding the subject, so I'll just kick it off. OG, the stage is yours.
Yeah, man. So I don't think I've ever talked about Harden on any of the spaces. I think I was probably Harden's biggest fan early on, but he showed me some things early on when he first got here. That I was a little bit worried about. I was worried about how he had a tendency to tap out on the second end of back-to-backs. He would always, it was almost like whenever things got tough, and that was just a small sign of things getting tough, and he would tap out. But again, his offense was so great, he kind of overlooked a lot of things. I don't have a lot of respect for quitting. My son and I differ on this quite a bit. He seems to think that, yeah, it's okay, man. He's trying to win. Those guys, and it's more Kyrie's fault than it is James' fault. But to me, I'm just more old school in that you signed that contract, and I know you want to win a championship. That's all fine and dandy. But I don't know. I just don't like his method. I don't like how he left in Houston, and then the pattern again, how he's leaving how he wanted to leave Brooklyn just because things got a little bit tough. Now, I totally get the Kyrie thing. He didn't sign up for that, right? He didn't sign up for Kyrie not wanting to take the vaccine and not being able to play in home games. I totally get that. At the same time, the one thing I will say is you don't need Kyrie, James, and KD to win a championship. I always thought that was overkill anyway. I think you can definitely win a championship with KD and Kyrie. And I think Ben Simmons is a better fit just because he gives them something more that they need more of as opposed to more offense. They don't need another 25. They could stand to use some good defense, though. They could stand to use some good perimeter defense, some good ball handling, James can create shots, so can Ben. Ben can't make a jump shot specifically, but he can create shots and he can play defense. I think that team is probably more dangerous now. I know that may sound crazy, and part of that may be some of my James Harden dislike at this point, but I honestly feel like they're a better team now. And I also, at the same time, I think Philly is, needless to say, better. They're both scary. That goes to show you how bad things were, right? I'm going to trade you within the same conference to another contender. That goes to show you how bad things really got. All I want is for the NBA to make it work, man. Set it up. I want to see that. I want to see that so bad. I just hope that Brooklyn doesn't end up having to play Milwaukee early, because if they do, I think we won't get a chance to see it. But I want to see that in the worst way. I know the next game is sometime in March. I think March 10th or something like that, I think. But it's going to Philly. I don't think Ben is going to show up for that game. If he does, he'll probably have a wrestling mask on or something and try to fool everybody. But, yeah, that's I'm here for that. I cannot wait. I think this is great drama. This is going to be some of the best drama we've had in a long time. I'm here for it. I'm looking forward to it. Both teams got a lot better, I will say. I think both teams are in a better position now, needless to say.
Yeah, for sure. And before I pass it off to you, Brad, I mean, to me, the sense I get, and I'll be honest with you, I'll be rooting for James and Morey on the Sixers just because, I mean, I'll root for the Rockets, will always be my team. But then since we're bad, when playoffs time comes around, I just pick one team in each conference and hope they meet in the finals. So I'm picking the Suns because I love CP3 and the Sixers because I love Morey and Harden. I mean, I used to love them more, but I mean, the past is the past, and I try not to stay stuck on it too long. But I will say, I kind of understood when he left Houston. He didn't believe we were good enough. He was tired of being here, whatever. He's someone who always thinks the grass is greener on the other side. It seems, I mean, that's probably the reason he asked out 2 times. So it kind of made sense. He is getting older. He wants a ring. He could have gotten a ring in Brooklyn with the staff that they have and with the personnel that they have. So to be in Brooklyn in a really good situation, in a super team, even though it's not perfect, even though there's been injuries, and even though Kyrie's a weird guy, you're asking out of a super team to go form another kind of super team in the same conference. Just seems like he's getting a little bit too picky at this point, right? It's just like, if it doesn't work with the Sixers, are you going to demand out again? To me, it was kind of weird. But Brad, what about you? What are some thoughts you had on the whole James Harden situation? And if you want to get into that, also, how does that impact the Rockets moving forward? Because we have so many of the Nets picks.
Yeah, just all in all, when I looked at this trade, I just looked at what the Nets gave up to get James Harden, you know. I'll summarize it really quickly. They gave up Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Karuks, Taurean Prince, 3 first-round picks, and 4 pick swaps, all unprotected. And now they have Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and 2 first-round picks in return for that. If you look at it from that standpoint, they gave up a lot to get Ben Simmons, Andre Drummond, Seth Curry, and 2 first-round picks. But as OG said, this makes them a better team because they don't really need, you know, what James Harden does on the court. Yes, it worked really well. They had a great record when he was on the court with them. I think they were 13-3 when they were together. But now you have a guy who's going to go out there and play great defense, give them ball handling. And a guy that they've been missing this year is Joe Harris. Now they get Seth Curry. He can come in there and shoot really well. And Drummond, they've always lacked paint presence. You know, Claxton's been playing pretty well for them this year. But Blake Griffin's not that guy anymore. LaMarcus Aldridge, you know, great mid-range shooter, but he's not a good defender. So Drummond's going to be a good fit over there. So I like the fit for Brooklyn if they can get all healthy. Kyrie, hopefully the mandate changes in his favor. I don't think that'll happen. But on paper, that's a great team that should win the championship. You know, when you look at it – oh, actually, one more thing I want to touch on Brooklyn, because there's actually like a little awkward aspect going on with the team, because you have Ben Simmons getting packaged with Seth Curry and Andre Drummond. You know, so Andre Drummond and Seth Curry's perspective, they just had Ben Simmons quit on their team, and now they have to go play with him. So I wonder how that's going to work out and how they're going to gel again, because I'm sure they had some kind of – they felt some kind of way about him. But yeah. Moving away from that team, I kind of wanted to touch on the Sixers, because I think James Harden and Embiid as players is an amazing fit, right? Like a point guard and a center. Harden, probably the best – or top three combo guard in the NBA, and B looks like the best player in the NBA. I'm not saying he is the best player in the NBA. That's just how good he's been playing. He might mess around and win the MVP this year. So that fit should work perfectly, especially in Morey ball. But what I'm looking at is both of their personalities, because I've seen these players clash before on the court when the Rockets have played the Sixers, and you know they've gotten in a few scuffles. And Harden has not got along with any of his co-stars in the past. Not Dwight Howard, not Chris Paul when it ended. His brother, Russell Westbrook, ended on bad terms, and now Kyrie and Kevin Durant, who didn't even want to pick him in the All-Star game. He got picked dead last. So it's just – it's going to be interesting to see how they fit. But as players, I think they fit really nicely together. Philly got better as a team as well. I think both of these teams got better. And, Prod, you wanted me to touch on how it affected the Rockets. As a Rockets fan, when you heard the news that James Harden was leaving, you're thinking, okay, I'm hoping he leaves for free in the offseason, because that's going to benefit the Rockets a lot. The Nets gave up all these picks for nothing. But now they get Ben Simmons, so they get younger in that aspect. So as a Rockets fan, you hope that they don't win a championship. One of these superstars get, you know, extremely angry and leave, as we've seen, you know, with superstars in this day and age. If they aren't happy, they will ask their way out, even though KD signed an extension. I think Ben Simmons is on an extension as well. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But it'll be interesting to see how Brooklyn pans out. But if you're a Rockets fan, you need that team to fail very miserably if you want these picks.
Yeah, for real. OT, you wanna add a little bit after that?
Yeah, I was just gonna say about the good point you made about Embiid. I think Embiid, I don't know, this whole deal, this whole Ben Simmons deal, it's triggered him in such a good way. It's made him lock in like he's never been locked in. One of the things I've never really cared about him was he just always looked like he was kind of laissez-faire, like it really didn't matter. Like he played around too much, like he didn't take it serious. He's been locked in this year. Like he's making it a point to show everybody that I am that guy. And I'm going to carry this team. That's shown me quite a bit. And I also felt that take that you just made about the personalities between Embiid and James. That's going to be tricky because, like you said, all the people that he hasn't been able to get along with. At the very least, I thought he'd be able to get along with Russell. I thought he'd try to make that work with Russell. But that got to the point where it wasn't a good fit. And so now I'm just like, I don't know where this guy can play. I don't know who he can play with. I can't think of a player where it's like, well, yeah, that might work. Not a superstar anyway. And you need at least two these days to try to win a championship. So it'll be interesting to see. It has the potential to be really good. I think from a basketball standpoint, it has a chance. From a overall, that basketball, including personalities and all that, it could be combustible. But we'll just have to wait and see. I'll be honest with you. I don't necessarily want to see him fail, but I won't be rooting for him. I think I'm going to be rooting for CP3. I'm locked in with that guy. I love him to death. And then on the East, I'll be rooting for Milwaukee. I'm a big – turning to a big Giannis fan. So that's what I'm hoping to see. But it's going to be very interesting, man. Like I said, I'm here for it. With the Rockets and the season we're having, that's going to be the next best thing right there, Philly and Brooklyn. Boy, if that happens, that'd be great. Seven games.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so – I think that's a really good positive March Hill way to wrap up the episode. I think we had some good talk. But anyways, Brad, you want to go ahead and tell the people where they can find you again?
Yes, again on Twitter, my at handle is BradoNBA. That's BradeauxNBA. You can see me on there doing Twitter spaces along with Paolo and Don, who's your normal host, of course. And you can catch OG up there. He's come on recently, had amazing takes. So it's great to talk to you. You did a really good job on your first time up here.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah,
yeah, you can. OG, go ahead and do the same thing. So make sure you spell out your ad so people can find you. I know you're one of the most underrated accounts on the entirety of Rockets Twitter.
Sure. Yeah, you can reach me on Twitter at Mr. Bolware. That's MR last name Bolware, BOLEWARE. Yeah, and I'm if there's a space going on with Paolo and Brad and Will at Biased Houston, I think, on Twitter. Yeah, I'm pretty much I'm gonna be in there. Yeah, and I love talking basketball. I enjoyed this. So whenever you guys doing it again and you know, if I can be a part of it, I'd love to be a part of it.
100%. And to close it out, make sure to follow the Apollo Launchpad account on Twitter. That's where all the pods are, like the links are posted on there. Make sure to follow the Apollo HOU flagship account. Make sure to follow my co-host who's slagging and is not here today, Don Knock at Don Knock at DONKNOCK. And follow me, your host tonight, Paul Alves NBA. That's PAULOALVESNBA. Everything I do, from podcasts to live shows to articles, we'll find the self links on there. It's been great talking with all of these gentlemen tonight. Stay safe and go Rockets.